You're listening to the Sound Atlas.
Hey, welcome back to another episode. I'm your host, Captain Dean, and my guest on the Sound Atlas today is the man everyone's been asking for, Ricky Hodge.
What's going on, fella?
Apparently you have a school, the School of Ricky Hodge, and everybody went to it, except for me.
Well, it's still open. Now, I just live off the road in the country a little bit, and I see all these musicians, and I just, not only my love of music, but my love for the people that play and are wanting to do something. So when I see things in them, I try my best to coax them over to the house, and then I kind of capture them.
I think you've done
make them play for hours and hours.
The amount of people that mention your name and the fact that you helped give them some sort of guidance or suggestions on music or musical instruments, and I mean, I could make a list of names of people that I've personally interviewed. But I know that Tommy Starr interviewed some people when he did this that would mention your name. So you are, and this first question, of course, is where are you from? I want to say you're from Glasgow.
Glasgow, Kentucky.
Because you had such an impact on so many people from the Glasgow area and the music scene of Glasgow.
Just passing the torch on. When I was getting started, I had so many people that are names that I will mention that just help me out when they didn't have to. They seen something in me. If I wanted to be lazy, not play, or just mess around, they'd be like, no, pick the guitar up and get after it. And I remember how much that meant to me later on in my music career. So I like giving back. It means a lot to me.
That's good. That's something that was instilled in you at an early age, apparently.
Yes, sir.
So growing up in Glasgow, the hotbed of the music scene, it seems like, because I've interviewed a ton of people from there. It's hard to deny what that town has pushed out. When did you get started in music, and what was your first things to get into?
Well, I'll tell you, like, growing up on the farm, you know, we didn't even have electricity at first.
Really?
And then we got electricity, and I had a record player. And somehow I ended up with a Stray Cat Strut.
Really?
And oh my God, when I heard that, I just went crazy, because before it was AM radio.
Right.
You know, listening to Merle Haggard, which I love. But at the time I didn't, you know, I was like, I want to rock out. But it was at a yard sale. I was 5 years old, and I seen this silver album. I was like, that looks cool. And I started noticing these four little faces on it, which come to be double platinum. And I fell in love with Kiss at 5 years old, man, and it's never been right.
Wow.
Since.
So Stray Cats and Kiss were like the first introduction to this world of rock and roll?
And the Beach Boys, and then Ray Stevens.
Now that is variety right there. That's cool, man. And you were, like you said, you were five. You were young.
Right.
When music really came into your life. When did you realize this is something I want to do and pick up an instrument?
Well, my cousin Richard Bobby, the drummer for Luther, he was started to play guitar, and we were always close, and we loved music the same, you know, and just get up like those old ghetto blasters out and jam on them. Well, he got guitar, and I had some Muppet drums, but he had stompers I wanted. So long story short, I traded my Muppet drums to that, and he started playing drums. Then he basically made me get on guitar, and I was 14.
Okay.
And he put me to work, too.
So prior to that, just growing up as a kid, you were listening to a lot of music?
Oh, yes.
Just
it was.
Where, like, direction was it coming from?
Well, you know, you had your Casey Kasem top 40.
Yep.
And, of course, the 80 songs on there that stuck out. And then going over to Richard's house again. Between his whole family, they listened to such an eclectic mix of music. You heard everything from the blues to old country to Black Sabbath.
But the fact that you and Richard are related, does that mean that you came from a musical family? Or was it just
actually
a music appreciation kind of thing?
More of appreciation, but then more on his side of the family played than my side.
Okay.
And then where I would go stay with him,
right,
you know, that really affected me.
Right. That's cool. I think I knew this, but I didn't know how close or related you guys were. But I maybe heard through the grapevine that the two of you were related.
Yeah.
But yeah, Richard from Luther, well-known band, well-respected band from
Very
this area.
Respected. He's just such a solid, great musician.
Oh, he's phenomenal. He's a great guy, but just musically speaking, phenomenal drummer.
Yeah, he's awesome.
And a great band that has really influenced a ton of bands from this area.
Oh, man. And a lot of surrounding.
Yeah.
But through...
But you had drums, he had guitar, and you all just switched kind of took off from there.
He gave me his Muppet drums, and it took off from there. But, through him, because I was doing the Barron County thing, and he went to Glasgow, and he met up with Paul Hatchett,
mm-hmm.
David Engstrom, John McGee, Sean Rigsby, and so many others. And it was kind of like an old 70s with punk mix, mm-hmm. you know. And all of a sudden, I was thrown into all these musicians and watching them play. Like David Engstrom, I cannot give him enough.
Right. You and a thousand
and
other people,
else,
yeah.
And then I'd met and been turned on to that. And then in ninth grade, I'd never seen like heavy music played live. And it was Kevin Gross and a Gibson boy and Jared England on guitar. And when Jared started playing, I felt like I just lifted out of my body. Because
right.
I'd never seen guitar played like that, especially electric. And that's when I really knew that I wanted to start playing.
Okay. And you were how old at that point?
14.
Okay.
Started a little later, but
no,
just,
not really. I mean, that's kind of the common age. I usually hear people between 12 and 15 pick it up and actually take it serious, even at that age. It's like, it just calls to you, I think.
Yeah. After that, man, it's led to right now.
Mm-hmm. So what did you start doing? Like, what was the first thing you got into, and how long did it take for you to develop your guitar playing skills to like start playing in like garage bands or anything?
My aunt bought me my first one of the old school Epiphones and four lessons from Backstage Music. Kenny Weber. And
you're the first one that says it. Everyone else says they went to Backstage Music, but Kenny Weber did not give them the lesson.
Well,
they got it from someone else. But you actually got lessons from Kenny Weber.
He gave me four lessons, and after that, he said, "Why don't you just buy an amp or pedals?" He said, "Because
you got what you needed, and kind of let you loose."
Yeah, he was just saying, "Come on in the shop," like he did a lot of people.
Yeah,
I've
heard that name
Backstage
so many times.
Was like the eclectic mix of every style of music and just great musicians,
right?
And started just playing from there, and then Richard and Mike Bailey, myself, Paul Hatchett. Got into a band called The Grind.
The Grind.
My first little feel of any kind of music success.
And this was still around the same time frame or a few years?
Well, it was about 17 or 18 then.
Okay.
I think 18, and then we recorded our first album at WOVO, Wolvo.
Wolvo.
Actual radio station down there. Barrick recorded us there.
Okay.
And from there, we started playing in Lexington and Louisville and Nashville and stuff. Like, we were still just young playing... It was Black Cat Bone, of course, but Skinny Bones at the first, and they was helping us out.
Okay.
So we got a following going and just kept recording and playing.
Yeah. So it got you, and you never let go of it.
Oh, never let go of it.
So how long did that band last?
We lasted probably 3 years.
Okay.
And played a lot. And then.
But you really developed your craft as a guitar player.
Oh,
like
yes.
Like, you found your niche in sound... style, like you just kind of were like, this is it, I'm gonna stick with this and go this direction.
Yeah, this is it.
Because I've never seen you do, I mean, I've seen you in a lot of heavy stuff,
mm-hmm.
but I know you're capable of doing like other things.
Yeah,
like the acoustic stuff and the, I would say, americana folky kind of
trippy stuff. I mean, just music in general.
All right. But you seemed to me, when I first caught wind of you, the heavier side, the hard rock stuff.
Yeah.
That was more of your element, I think.
Yeah, just, growing up, getting those cars on a country day and just kicking that cassette on wide open and just letting it go.
Man. Oh, yeah.
Just driving around and that heavier stuff, old Judas Priest.
Yep.
Motley Crue, Kiss. But then, of course, there was Johnny Winters and Pat Travers.
Right. You were getting all the elements of music, and that developed your guitar playing,
and
obviously.
And I have never thought that I'd like old style country music the way that I do.
And why is that, do you think? You ever try to sit down and think that
Merle
out?
Merle Haggard.
Yeah?
Just something about Merle Haggard hit, and it's just been like my if I had top 10, 9 of them would be heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, 70s, and then Merle Haggard would be up there in the top three.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah, I love it.
That's awesome. So what did you do out of the ashes of that band ending?
I moved. The singer took a hiatus for a while and we kind of split. Then I moved to Cincinnati and played around. But then when I come back from Cincinnati, picked around a little bit, wasn't satisfied, didn't have the road out of my system yet, so mm-hmm. I went to Chicago, and then hung out with people like Al Jorgensen from Ministry, Jimmy, the drummer for Smashing Pumpkins, and several of the Wax Track records.
And this would have been in the mid-90s, right?
Just first of the 90s. Yeah. I just turned like 21, okay. Probably.
So I know the Pumpkins were a really well-known Chicago band. So if you're hanging out with them, they're still on the club circuit at that point.
I worked at a bar, the drummer would come in there, and they practiced at a place called Double Door.
Okay.
I ended up getting to spend the night at the bass player's house just hanging out with a bunch of them. But I was walking down the road in Chicago, and I heard a song, and I'm like, I know this song, and that must be a live version I've never heard. And, of course, being a nosy musician, hearing a new song, I peeked through the side of this window and could see like about 2 inches of the Smashing Pumpkins having a practice. And you know, around here you don't get to see that much.
No.
And I was like, yes, this is the coolest.
Now, what, go back to your time in Cincinnati. Did you just goof around looking for nothing significant came
no,
from that?
No, I didn't even know I was going to move there. It's just okay. I had $20 and I think 2 pairs of pants.
But
my
you weren't like
said,
in a band
go?
Or anything?
No.
Okay.
It was just.
But when you got to Chicago, you got into the music scene.
Yes, and started learning more.
More about it. Did you play and like hang out in the clubs or?
I worked at one of the bars mm-hmm. that had, like I'm saying, Chicago's finest musicians,
right.
sports people, and everything come in after hours.
Okay,
you know, and it was.
But again, like you weren't playing in the band at that
no,
point.
No, but okay. I was gathering so much because
right.
I was just threw into the middle of a whole scene. You
yes,
know,
you were.
An industrial scene after being used to here.
Yeah.
Totally
that stuff
blew
was
my mind.
Huge.
Yes.
Because I remember when Ministry came out, or not came out, but just that one album, it would have been like 92, 93. That
yes.
was massive.
It was huge. And then KMFDM come yeah. out of that and a ton of bands. But I moved back from there and I met, you know, I got together with Patrick Richardson, Ronnie Peach, Drew Lewis. And the Volvolux crew.
Okay.
That's kind of the time frame that started. And see.
And what year was this, do you know?
It would have been 90. I could be wrong, but I think 92 or 93.
Okay. All right.
And I still had that head full of the new industrial style.
Right.
And then I get back and Pat and them already had been going through it.
Mm-hmm.
But we just kind of incorporated into our southern stoner psychedelic
right.
heavy
yeah.
mix. That's why we had so many samples and stuff going on stage.
Right.
But Volvolux was a really fun band. Like, we got to go back to Chicago later and do a big warehouse party and get mm-hmm. the headline. And it was cool getting to hear music on the radio.
Right.
And, like, a full-page ad in a newspaper and stuff. It was amazing.
Yeah, and you guys made a pretty significant dent in this music scene.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I don't know club-wise if it was there, so to speak, but the musicians circle around here.
Oh, man.
You know, it was a big deal.
Yes.
And I was part of that group. Like, people
Tomatoes.
Were coming to me, yeah, bringing
right.
in. Marty knew a lot about you guys and
Marty's
stuff. So,
great, man.
So I was catching wind about you and this band around that time.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure I saw you guys. I just can't remember where.
Thursdays or Gary's?
It may have been Thursdays.
No,
because
that was a great little.
I was underage at the time, but in the music scene, these clubs would let me in because they were like, oh, just hang out by the soundboard and don't order a drink.
Yeah, cops come in and run out the back.
Yeah, I mean, I got to see a lot of good shows because I was in one of the most popular bands in town.
Right, yeah.
So it was helpful. That I knew all these people already.
Oh, yes.
So my connections helped me a lot. But I'm pretty sure I saw Volvolux at least once.
Yeah, probably did. And it could either have been one of those situations, well, I'm sorry that you did, or that was a killer show.
Dude, I don't know. That's a foggy time for me.
Oh, my God.
I just know I was
Amen.
There. I was there.
I was there somewhat. My body was there. My mind was somewhere else a few times. But It was a good learning experience. Right. We had a good run. And
yeah, how long was that run? Because that's a name you don't hear a lot unless certain people, yeah, certain people of this generation, my generation, you know, we know about that band.
Yeah, because when we did split out, it just went, mm-hmm. and we basically shut it down. But we had some great moments. I mean, we're still all good friends. And
good.
Like Pat went on to do Patson and Ronnie.
Yes, he did.
Played with, what was the band in Nashville? Chapel, was it
Whitechapel? No.
No, it was, he's going to kill me if he hears this. But they did well in Nashville. And, of course, Brian White with the Valentines and Fox.
Of course.
Club.
And Brian White I saw when I was a kid.
Oh, Brian's
in High
amazing.
Street, you know.
He's one of the best. Absolutely. And best people. He loves the scene around here. And
yes, he does.
He does a lot for it.
Yes, he has.
He really does.
Very much done a lot for this music scene.
No. We luckily, we were one of the weird bands, of course, but we still had some of that groove to us. So, mm-hmm. like, Clutch and Marilyn Manson was playing in Louisville, and after they got done playing, we got to play, like, a party for them and stuff.
Oh, that's cool.
And it was awesome to get to see Manson and Clutch out there hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
So, that was a good deal.
You've done some good stuff, man. Even at that, even early on, you were doing,
I
like, cool
it.
Things.
One thing that I'm not a big name dropper other than the million I'll probably drop during this, but during the Cincinnati, you said what happened in Cincinnati.
Yeah, what happened in Cincinnati?
I got to spend the night with Alice in Chains.
Like after
and
a show?
Monster Magnet.
Okay.
Yeah, like literally spend the whole night. Just like, it was amazing, man.
That's cool.
That was a big memory from there. But that really influenced me to see like a bunch of guys that was larger than life. And when you hung out with them, it was no different than
yeah,
coming
just,
back home and
right.
hanging with your friends. And it just showed me that everyone has that ability if you put forth the effort. The time and the dedication and the passion and love for it.
Right.
You know. And
I get that.
Like, that's another reason I like to help people so much. That's one big reason I wanted to do this, you know, is for everyone out there that's wanting to play, no matter who you've been or what you've been through, if you keep your eyes on the music, it will be there for you. And if you've went through some stuff to where you've had to walk away from it for a while, if it's truly in you, it's always there, and it can always come back, because here I am at my age about to start a new original, mm-hmm. you know, a heavy band, start playing out, and it's just very inspiring to know that just in life, just keep your head on it. Like, my problem was I was a rock star before I got to right. hit the stage, and that doesn't work.
No, it doesn't
it's
work,
fun,
but
it will not work.
I think it helps a big amount if you're young. And you do all the stupid stuff and survive.
Yes.
So it yes. humbles you later in life, and you can look back on it and go, well, that was stupid, but I've learned from it, and now I can do it differently.
Right. That's why I worry all these young guys to death, because if I even think they're going to do something that might take them away from their dreams and passion, mm-hmm. I get a little overly, almost like a daddy figure, going, right. no, no, please don't, but it just matters.
Well, and you know, that's good. I think that's why so many people have respect for you around here, because you've done that kind of thing for them.
Yeah.
You've been a source of inspiration, and you've been a source of guidance, and unknowingly have been a massive influence on them as a musician.
I tell you.
So good one on you there.
I like it. Well, they still influence me, you know.
Yeah.
It gives yeah, me that
you
them
are,
new burst.
You
of,
are very mutual aspect in this world.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You're both on and off stage, a fan and a musician.
Oh, I love it.
So you can balance both, and you've been balancing it for years.
It's just part of life.
It is.
Trying to get it all
but,
mixed together. to
so
mesh.
Coming out of that band, like you were saying, you come back to this area, right?
Right.
After the Chicago experience.
Basically, I just played around with people for a while after mm-hmm. that because to be honest, some of the warnings that I give, you know, some of these younger people coming up is the things I was doing at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And the elements kind of said, well, if you're not going to respect the talent that I give you,
right.
we're going to show you what it's like not to have it for a moment.
Right.
So now I see that, and I graciously accept the time that it was not taken from me, just, you know, I was on hiatus.
Right.
Regrouping and coming back to get it again is one of the most beautiful things I've ever experienced.
Mm-hmm.
To see the support that I have from people,
right,
and the amount of playability, You know, I'm not an arrogant person, but I'm playing better now than I ever have.
Man, I've seen you play some killer stuff, so.
Oh, it's just so much fun.
Still there.
It's so much fun.
I mean, it's like riding a bike.
Yes,
it is. You know, it always comes back to you. But, yeah, you have those times with some downtime to just, you know, it's fate. Do you believe in the fate aspect of things happen for a reason, even though you don't know the reason? It's still.
I don't believe in coincidences.
Right.
So I think it's laid out there.
Okay.
But what about, as a whole, our music scene? Just in this area.
Mm-hmm.
I swear, I can't believe. I mean,
it's amazing to be a part of it.
Yes.
And it's almost humbling to be a part of something like this, because when I hear my name mentioned along this group of names that I'm in awe of, it's weird.
Well, I mean,
but I know a lot of people do that with you, including me. We all put you up in that roster of names of influence.
And we all support each other so much.
Right? It's been amazing.
There's a thing that's different. Like, all the different places I've lived, there's not as much camaraderie.
Mm-hmm.
And there may be a million musicians, but maybe, you know,
right,
a tenth of them are even, you know, good enough.
Oh, I get it.
Around here, it's just like you can see an old man, 80, with a mohawk sitting on a stump feeding his chickens and burning a banjo up. And
I saw him yesterday.
Yeah, he was out. Good deal.
So where are you at this point in your music?
I'm in a band called The Ghost and the Human Hoax.
Right.
Eric Croft, Dylan Compton.
Which is a name that existed prior, a few years ago.
Yeah, we played, about 4 or 5 shows probably.
That's it?
Yeah, and just schedules and just everything.
Right.
You know, we still
Eric did the Crimson Croft thing for quite some time.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But was that on and off with The Ghost?
It was kind of after, and he just wanted to keep busy playing and put some of his stuff
out. I didn't know if they really intertwined or if they were like one branched off of another kind of thing. I mean, he's a phenomenal musician in his own right, like whether he's a solo artist or he's in a band, I mean, unbelievable talent.
He really is.
Yeah.
He definitely is a unique individual too, within the way he portrays his music and stuff.
But as we're taping this, you literally, like, recently, from this moment we're speaking, like a week ago, made the announcement that you guys have reformed this band and you're playing your first show.
Right.
With, like a comeback show in November.
With new drummer Chris Chapman, which everyone knows him as Doc.
I know him as Doc Chapman. Everybody says Chris, and I'm like, who?
Right.
Because I didn't grow up in Glasgow, so I don't know that. I think of him as Doc Chapman.
Yeah, he come in at a good point, too. Like a subject that's been on all of our minds here lately is Cody Glass, of course. He played drums for The Ghost and the Human Hoax previously.
Right.
And then with all the happenings, you know, it formed this band, which I'm really happy with what's going on now.
Mm-hmm. Was Doc friends with him? Or?
Yes, he used to go over to Cody's, and like, Cody would all the time be like, do you have anything you can show me? Can you come over and teach me something? You know,
Cody didn't know where I lived. Mm-hmm. And I made the joke with Lucas McPherson recently. He was like, if he had known where you lived, he would have been coming over.
Right.
Yeah. But he would call me on, like, video chat and just show me things and, like, take the phone around and point at drums and hit things. And, like, am I getting this right? Like, he was a real knowledge seeker
he was.
On drumming, because he told the story about how you helped coax him into being a drummer.
Yeah.
Or had a lot to do with pushing him in that direction.
I just seen it in him, and, of course, he would come over, and if he come over, you know, we wasn't going to watch TV and stuff. It was like, turn that off and let's get busy. We're both sick of playing in ourselves for a second. But then the next day when you come back, you know, it's just, it's so much better.
But who, and we'll touch on that as we talk, but as of right now, Ghost and the Human Hoax back, the name has been resurrected.
Right.
Croft was originally in the band.
Yeah, the original singer.
You were in the band.
Guitar, and Dylan Compton was a bass player.
And in the original band?
Yes.
Okay, I didn't know that. And he's here?
Yes.
He's right behind me.
Hey, Dylan.
He's right there. Can you see him?
Everyone see Dylan?
But Doc Chapman's coming in
because
Cody was the original drummer.
Right.
That's correct.
And he's coming in strong, too. He's a
He is a unbelievable drummer. I begged him to be in Captain Dean, and he wouldn't do it. And I knew there was a difference between distance, you know, Bowling Green, Glasgow. It was a scheduling thing. I don't think musically he was into what I was doing, but musically speaking, we have, I can say it. I don't know if he can, but just a lot of respect, musically speaking, and as drummers.
Well, yeah.
He was the drummer I wanted more than anybody, and he just wouldn't do it. You know, not that he wouldn't do it. I don't think he could do it.
Probably time frame.
It was a little bit of everything, you know, but he may have not musically been into it. I don't know. Because Jason Simpson kept trying to push him into it. Mm-hmm. He was like, I don't know. But, yeah, Doc's a great drummer, and, his time with Outhouse Etiquette was just...
Oh, and Dead Dick Hammer.
See, I met him around the time of the Dead Dick Hammer days, but when I saw him with Outhouse Etiquette, I saw him at Tidballs. I mean, I was just 5 feet from his drums while they were on stage, and it just cut my head off because of that snare drum. Like, he knows how to tune drums probably better than most people I've ever met.
Yeah, he's
like
really good.
Truly is a drummer, student of drumming. And so I have a massive amount of respect for him. So I can imagine this band is going to be killer.
Well, he's brought a lot, and his ideas have been really great. He's kind of tightened us up because I'll kind of trail off to six different things at once and be writing another lick before we get that one song finished. And these guys are really good about saying, hey, let's kind of come back to where we were at.
Let's finish this and move on from that.
Yes.
So we'll go back to where you were before we ventured out there in the 90s era when you leave Chicago and end up back down here.
Well, then I
was when the original Ghost started, or was that later? I think I misunderstood that.
The Ghost and Humex Hoax started, it was actually 4 years ago.
I was thinking that. What did you do when you came back here? When you ended up back down this area from traveling and stuff?
Well, I wanted to start playing again, but from where I'd been out about so much, I had friends in California and everywhere, and I moved to California.
You did.
I moved to San Antonio, Texas.
So you were gone from Kentucky for a while.
Yeah, on and off, I've probably been gone. I've been out of Kentucky on and off for about 8 years, probably altogether.
Wow, okay.
Which
so when did
like
you end up back here and get back into the music scene?
Well, through kind of fate, kind of really pushed me to where I had to have music 100% again.
Mm-hmm.
I had a son that passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Through all of that, you know, I really needed something to hang on to that was dear to me. And that old guitar, man, I swear, when I picked it up, you know, again, after all that stuff, it was just like I'd never played before. It was something new, a new love to me again. And then that's when I decided it's time, you know, to get on
that
the
makes
business.
Perfect sense.
Yes.
Obviously, I can't relate to that personal situation, but, I mean, I know how powerful music is.
Oh, my gosh.
Because
man,
it's helped me through everything.
Everything.
You know? So I can relate to you on that.
Yeah. That was the one thing that was powerful enough that, you know, that and the elements helped me out. You know, I'm not going to get into a religious thing on either way, so nobody knows what I believe in, but the elements helped me out.
I understand.
Powerful stuff. And I wish that I could just sit and start mentioning all the bands that are so insanely good. Who do we have? We have Wolf Island, Cosmonauts, Kiss Kiss Bang, the Josephines. Help me out here. Of course, Luther.
I don't know how far back you want to go.
Sixth Floor. We have, who's some of the new guys that's out today that I may be missing?
I mean, you pretty much covered the new stuff. I'm trying to think of the old stuff.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Remember Genocide?
Yeah. Yeah.
Seth
Sprouse.
And Tim and
that came out.
Barry McCandless.
Did that turn into
to Seven Limbs?
Okay, right.
They got Nathan to sing for
Yeah,
them.
Yeah, yeah. Because the New Gods was after. The New Gods came after Seven Limbs. Seth told the story. I think it may have been just a side project for him
like
in a way.
Them sitting around picking.
Eventually
stuff,
it became the full-time thing for him.
That's just another.
But I know that you
band.
Know a lot of those guys. Mm-hmm. You're part of that generation this music scene.
Yeah, all brothers.
So you were gone for quite some time, just out living. Right. What year did you end up back in this area and get back into music?
I would move off, then I'd come back. And,
okay, so it wasn't like a full gone 8 year thing.
No, I would. You were back. I'd come home and latch. Do a little parasiting again.
It's the bubble, right?
And take it home, and I would share it with the rest of the world.
Yeah.
I'd come home and get my tank filled again, and then go out and about.
So when did you end up back here and actually stay?
I've been stationary for about 10 or 12 years now.
Okay. That makes sense.
For all that.
Yeah.
Then got all my equipment, had a full scholarship to SAE in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
Then again, with the baby passing, I just didn't do that right and didn't, complete that. But I was 3 months away from doing an intern at Sony Records.
Wow.
Which would have been amazing. But I tell you, I'm really just happy and have all my heart and being goes out to people that are an artist or an entrepreneur and just want to get out and do it for themselves and can make it happen for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Or the people that help support the ones that are out doing
right.
it. Because they're as important.
It's just as important.
Yes,
that's probably even more important.
Because that is the connection, other than a live show, to, from fan base to the band.
I think that's the difference of our music scene, is it is the support system of people that aren't musicians, that aren't club owners.
Right.
The press and the stuff that we have access to that most music scenes don't have.
Right.
And of course everybody can go through what they think of their interpretation of this, that, and the other, but I think Brasher said it best when he said this is the best music scene in the world because of all those things that make it go round.
I agree 100%. And I've been out to see a lot of it, and it's this is beautiful. It's a blessing. And if we all, as people, would just form together the way that our music scene does,
mm-hmm.
the rest of this world, man, would be smooth sailing.
Yes, it would. And musicians should run for office.
And people give you the thanks because look at what you do for the scene, even just doing this,
I mean, I'm just a host, but, Russell Brooks started it. And, again, it's like you've got someone who's a musician who's in the art field. And then it's like, hey, our town has a great music scene.
Right.
These stories need to be heard.
Yes.
These snapshots of band names and clubs that are gone need to be told.
No. Oh,
so
definitely.
It's like we're doing like the old fashioned fireside storytelling stuff to keep the stories alive and passing them on to the next generation.
And to me, that's what has a personal touch that gets my personal soulful feeling interest.
Yeah. Because I wouldn't say you've been in a ton of bands.
Well, I have. There's a lot.
You have, but I mean, like you say, a lot of things just come and go. It's
right.
Like quickly, not really established, but just more or less like garage bands jamming with friends.
Yeah.
You don't really nail things down and drive it,
No.
There was a lot of fun involved.
Probably hard to deal with, and I'm a little overly creative sometimes.
No, that's not a big
deal.
And it
gets in the way.
Depends on who you're
myself
with, though.
And
well,
other
that's
people.
Bad.
I was going to say, all these other people have helped me,
Yeah, steer you in the right direction.
Basically, where I'm at right now is I've got great guys to jam with, got a great town to do it in, got great people helping out, and it's just if a person, no matter what you've went through, you can always come back from it,
Right.
And to all these young cats out here playing, hit the stage. Don't be a rock star before you're a stage star. Definitely. Because it'll come back to you.
I know
there's lots of fun in it. But.
Yep.
But.
There's a juggling act
I'll
there.
Tell their mama on them. That's where I'm at. I love everybody. And one thing is we do have a show coming up at the Dive in Cave City, November the 30th.
Mm-hmm. That would have already happened by the time this airs, I bet.
Yeah,
this is actually later on, but
guys, what about
but
that
at least
show we
back
had at the started, Dive?
Yeah, that show was awesome.
And it's going.
But
be
the fact of the matter is you're back in this. This band has been brought back, and I think the timing's right.
Oh, yeah. It feels right.
I think this is what you needed after all you've been through lately.
Right.
I know what you've been through lately.
Exactly.
And but I would say the timing has to be perfect for you to find this again, because it wasn't that long ago you were in this band called Zudemos, and it was outstanding.
That was a great band. It was
a great band and completely came out of nowhere.
Billy Stone,
but it
Jeff
was short lived.
Yes,
and that was hard for me to see that.
They
go.
Lived in Greene County.
Yeah,
so it was like
was it difficult? Is that really what it boiled down to? Was distance for
a
you
lot,
guys? Really,
a whole lot of it.
That sucks, man. It was a great band.
Yeah, so we had fun.
Yeah, you did.
Oh, one band I didn't mention.
Yeah, go through the list of names. Like, when you come back to this town, or even prior to coming back to this town, name the bands you've been in that people may recognize.
Okay, I've been in The Grind. I've been in Volva Lux. I've been in, well, it was Valentine's on Into the Fox Cult.
And the Valentine's went far.
Yeah, they did well.
They really had, they could have had a golden opportunity. I was living in Nashville when the Valentine's were happening.
Yes.
And I was hearing about the Valentine's through the Nashville music scene.
Oh, they're amazing. Oh, within that, I have to say, hi, Todd Wallace. I didn't mean to forget you out. He was in the Valentine's.
Yes, he was.
Fox Cult.
Yep.
Great guy. One of my good friends. I was in a band with some of Hank III people, and we had a sludge band called Mung with Sean Pettigo and Zach Shedd and Adam Sheriff.
That's awesome.
Played some with them. I was in a country band with Cody, Old Cane Tuck.
Yes. You guys did quite a bit.
Zudemos, a band called Good From Evil. I was with Marty and Kyle and Doombala.
That's right. You played bass in Doombala, which has been one of those bands that just, it's touch and go. It's basically Marty Tao's like solo project.
Yeah.
But he put a name on it. And he started doing that about the same time I started doing the Captain Dean thing.
Yep.
He wanted me to play drums for Doombala. I wanted him to play bass in Captain Dean. And we were just, you know, Marty and I have a long history, you know. Like, I think when Tomatoes had its first breakup, it never regained what it had in the original days. So we just had this back and forth relationship musically.
Right.
You know, and it was two strong-minded people trying to run a band, you know, it just doesn't work.
Not all the time, it sure doesn't.
But I forgot that you did a stint in Doombala. I think you played bass.
Yeah, I played bass. Okay. See, I was going to say paid musician, but unpaid, hired, you know, hit man for music.
But
bass,
you've always
or
played
guitar.
Music that you liked.
Mm-hmm, right.
That's what I've noticed about you.
Yeah.
I've never seen you play in some shitty top 40 band. Or
I wouldn't even start to know how.
Exactly. Because you do what you do, or you get involved with musicians that you relate to.
Right.
And that's what drove your passion to keep playing or to even say yes to the offer.
Right.
You've always done what you wanted to do, and it was either your music or someone else's music, but music you were completely understanding of that world and that element.
Right. Any other just didn't make any sense to me. Whether I liked the other kind of music or not, if it just didn't hit me that way, I couldn't play it or do the band justice. I didn't want to, like, you know, not give them what they needed if I wasn't as interested. So I'd be honest and just move on.
So after all these years of all the stuff you've done, would you say you're mainly a guitar player, even though a lot of people may have seen you as a bass player?
Well, see, I was a singer and guitar player for Volva Lux, and I didn't want to sing at all. There was just no one else, so I did what I could. But the guitar is my baby doll.
Yeah.
I can play drums, a little bit of banjo, resonator.
And this is why people say they have gone to the school of Ricky Hodge, because it's almost like you have this room filled with musical instruments, and you bring these kids in and you're like, whatever you want to do, let's see what you're good at.
Even at 3 a.m. we can keep the doors open and just wide open. Most god-awful noise you've ever heard, you know.
But that's the thing. I think you've said it a few times as we've been talking. You're really good about letting people know it's okay to suck. It's okay to start out and be hesitant or afraid.
Right.
But follow it.
Just follow
Don't
up.
Give up and do it. and do it justice. Make it what you want it to be. Yes. But you found these, I would say kids, because they're a lot younger than us, to even to this day. But, I mean, when you're discovering a lot of these guys, or they're discovering you, you're bringing them into your world, and they're seeking you out because somebody may have recommended you should go talk to him.
Or even on Facebook or whatever, I can just see something in a kid. Like, to be honest, like if I wasn't playing guitar, I'd love to have been an A&R guy, because I've even helped put a tremendous band together and stuff. Yeah. I just see something in people. It's just like
are good about seeing the talent in people that they don't see.
Right, and encouraging them.
Right.
You know, because
I think that's why so many people around here have the respect they have for you, is because...
Well, how many times have you been in not doing well mentally with music or something and just wanting to quit, and then there'd been a time that someone would just calmly say, it'll be okay. Yeah. Like, let's get up and practice. Let's try. The worst thing that can happen here today is that we can play music.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, it's a bad day. It's not a bad life. It's not a bad band. You're just having a bad day.
Right.
And some people can't get past that. They hit a brick wall and can't get past it.
Use your bad day. Use your great day. Just never forget, you know, why you're doing it.
It's just part of life.
That's right.
You know.
And we as musicians, it's a little bit different kind of life, the way we have to arrange schedules and feelings and family and everything. So it is, it's a blessing and a curse.
Exactly. I say that all the time. Sour. That is my exact phrasing of it.
It is.
Because it lifts me up and it tears me down, you know, and it's just part of the beast, you know.
Yes, it definitely is.
But, I mean, it's hard to go through all the stuff you've done in the time that we have, but you've done a great amount of stuff in this music scene, even though you've kind of come and gone over the years, you know. But like you said, you've been here for a good solid decade plus now.
Yes.
And you've done all these cool bands, man, and you've got to be a part of the club scene, especially when it was like a lot of the known heavier bands.
Right.
And you were in a lot of those bands. But then you also mentioned the thing about the old Cantuck.
Yeah.
Is it Kentuck or Cantuck?
Cantuck. Old Cantuck.
And you and Cody Glass had that going on. Mm-hmm. Now, you've known Cody Glass for a long time.
Oh, yes. Probably about 13 or 14 years.
Because when I interviewed him, he told the story about meeting you, or at least you coming into his life, and the music and everything that you all did. And that was a band that you all had together.
Right. These Old Bones.
Yeah.
We just put out... Well, where we had that studio at my house, my computer crashed because I had 11,000 hours of music on it, of original stuff. But that's just everybody together playing.
Right.
And he was a big part of a lot of that. He was like, you know, the drummer that was there.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, he picked up so quick because he was such a sponge and didn't care to ask.
No, he didn't seem afraid to ask. I think he told that story about... He was born into a musical family, a lot of guitar playing, a lot of picking string instrument stuff. But he had this burning desire to want to play music, or drums.
Drums.
And you were the one that was like, do it.
Right.
And you helped push him into the drumming world. And he really appreciated that.
Yeah.
And you can tell when you listen back to his episode of the Sound Atlas how much you alone meant to him.
Right.
As a friend and as a mentor, musician, as a band member, as a bandmate, you know, you guys had a really strong connection.
Yeah.
So I know you've had a long, hard summer dealing with his loss, and we were all with you. Right. We were all there with you, but not many of us were as close to him as you were. So
yeah, the support during that was amazing, and that I want to thank everybody for, and. God bless Lucas, Robbie, and thank God Eli is playing with him.
Yeah.
You know, he's a really good, tight drummer, and I was glad to see him get to get with him.
It was kind of a shock to see him on stage, and you're just kind of, you know, you don't know what to expect. And I didn't know how emotionally I was going to handle it, but I just took a big, deep breath and sigh of relief when they started playing, because I was...
Because it's rocked.
They made the right... I just feel like they did the right thing.
Yeah,
All the way around. Eli did the right thing. They did the right thing by giving him the opportunity.
Right.
it's an honoring thing, and it's keeping something going that Cody put so much work into.
Yes.
Why on earth would he want them to just stop because of his loss?
Just so, like,
it was the right thing to do.
When that dude in the Rolling Stones passed away and they had a show to do the next day, Keith and Mick both said, "We love him. We love our music. The show must go on."
Exactly.
And that just stuck in my mind.
It's the old mentality of entertainment.
Right.
If you break your leg, you put a cast on and you do the show.
Right.
You know, like, that's the old fashioned way of entertainment. And I believe music just as much as theater. You do that. That's if you have that mentality, no matter if there's five people or 500 people,
right,
you do that because it's scheduled and it's something that you have put a lot of time and work into. So do it.
And that feeling inside, that guilt and disgust that you didn't, would feel worse than leg afterwards.
I would think so. I hate canceling shows.
Oh, man.
Just because you feel bad, and if you start, somebody's sick. And all
I know
that,
so. You have to, but if you start being the band that cancels, then you'll be the band, you know, that cancels.
Crying wolf.
Before too long, the phone stops ringing.
Yep.
For sure.
That's true.
But I hope everybody that hears this knows that all the shows you guys want to give us, we'll take them. Ghosts and Human Hoax stuff. And we definitely have to play.
Oh, dude, that's a no-brainer. Yes. But going into 2020, as we're speaking, it's still 2019, but this episode will air in December of 2019.
Right.
So congratulations to you on getting into the 2019 season of Sound Atlas. But as we get closer and closer to the end of this year, what do you see on the horizon for Ghost and the Human Hoax in 2020? What's your plans?
The plans is to play as many shows, to cut, you know, we want to get some shows under our belts, but we definitely have to get into the studio before too long. And then we really want to get big into, like, artwork and video to go along with it, to have a full package.
Of course.
You know, and my thing on this one is I'm not going to be as involved with the goings on. I'm just going to, for once in my life, focus on one thing. Is that possible? Yes, it is. And
you
just
can
play
do it.
Guitar, because these guys I'm playing with.
Do you
Dylan,
need me
Eric,
to give you your kind of advice?
Yeah, definitely. You can do this. But they're so great at the business aspect and keeping things rolling. Then I sit back and just write with everyone else.
Yeah, I don't think you really need to worry about much.
The first time I've ever been able to just say, I just want to play and know that it's okay.
Yeah.
And that's a
just have
a
little
blessing.
Meetings and. As long as everyone's in agreement on what to do and the approach to it, then you should be good,
I'll
right?
I'll just tip my hat to them and say, I'm with you, fellas.
Yeah, I'm just going to go play guitar.
Right. Get me to the stage. You know.
But again, after all the stuff you've done over the years, I mean, is there anything in particular you want to reflect on? Or it's really difficult to put it all in perspective in a short
it's so
podcast.
Hard. There's so much. My main thing is my love for these younger bands. I know I keep saying this and saying
this. No, that's
so
good.
These
they
younger
need to
bands
hear it.
That's coming out. Remember, the music is why you're doing it. All that other stuff will come and go. And trust me, if music goes, you will not be happy with yourself and no one else around you will be. I know this because of the blessings I'm receiving from being able to still play, but, you know, just the cocaine and meth and all that mess that's going on. Please, people, realize that it will take it from you. I'm not trying to be, you know, down anyone's throat.
No,
I'm just saying
it
happened to me, and it worries me to death thinking it's going
to
happen
to another.
I have
been the sober guy backstage for years now. I'm the most boring person to hang out with, but I'm clean,
right?
And I'm here.
Right.
And I've got nothing in my way. Like, I can just focus on playing music.
Oh, man.
So it's great.
It's so
but I
great.
Had to relearn how to do music. Like, I had to put, I put it like this. When all of that happened and I got off drugs and all that stuff, it's like I had to learn how to be a musician again.
Right.
Going back to the mentality of when I was like 13, I had to find that love for music again, like
right.
like when I was a kid. And you have to relearn how to play shows and
oh,
do things without having these things with you. Or relying on them.
Right.
You know, I don't have to rely on anything anymore.
Yes. And anything that get in the way of something that's been given or a passion, you know, is unneeded, mm-hmm. unnecessary.
Absolutely.
And not only that, just their lives that would lead into them not getting to play as much. So yeah. I know I sound like an old granny, but if someone would have done me this way a lot more, you know, it would have helped me out a bunch. So
that's true, but you can't really argue with, you know, the way
fate's
gone, I guess, you know. You're still here.
Oh,
you're still doing it. I mean, yeah, it's like if you view this as another shot at doing it,
definitely.
You're not going to take it for granted.
I'll be 80 with a colostomy bag playing somewhere. If
well,
possible.
Good. And hopefully someone will empty it for you.
If they don't, that'll just turn into a different style of music. But like old Johnny Winter said, you know, I'm still alive and well. Every now and then I know it's kind of hard to tell, but I'm alive and well.
That's good.
And I love this scene, and I thank you so much for doing all this stuff, man.
I'm not doing anything.
So much.
I plug a cord into my phone and talk to people.
Hey, it allows people to get to connect.
Well, the purpose of this is to capture stories, and I mean, it's just, you've got so many.
Oh my God, dude.
I don't even know where to go, but I mean, again, you could probably have a part two if you wanted to later on, but
it would probably help speak on behalf, a little more thorough.
Yeah, but to speak on behalf of the local music scene, after all these years, you know, you've already mentioned all these bands and the people you know. These are your friends.
Right.
These aren't bands that you were inspired by and bought their CDs and then formed a band. You actually grew up knowing these people, yes. hanging out with them, going to their band practices, watching them climb the ladder of starting out to getting to where they are. And, you know, you've been along for the ride, and I think that's why so many people have so much appreciation for you.
It's been a blessing, I tell you, man. I've got to sit just in the same room with some of the finest musicians, you know,
mm-hmm.
that I've ever met, and it's all our areas, and like you said, our friends, you know.
But, I mean, you've done work on and off stage, so there's a lot of respect for you as a musician. You've influenced a lot of people as a performer and a player, and musically speaking, I think you give a lot of the guys that might question the music style or whatever they're looking at, like you give them the green light that no, it's okay, you can do whatever you want.
People are individuals, you know. Even within what I try to teach people, I'm like, don't worry about the, you know, the stylistic value of it. Just be you and let it out. This is just your basic way to approach it.
Yep.
But I have to mention Granshaw, Beyond Duplication, like Travis Furlong. I grew up around him and his mm-hmm. family. Of course, Tail Dragger, and of course, the Headhunters. David Barrick. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God, we love David. Man, part two, I just have to write all of them down. My whole interview could be going, list. Number one, check.
Just have a list of names and bands to talk about.
Yes.
But, honestly, again, like, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, honestly, I could talk more about all these other bands and my hopes and dreams.
Well, and that's what I was getting to. Like, on stage as a musician and all the things you've done, you've got that side. But off stage, you've run sound. You mentioned about being almost kind of like a matchmaker of introducing people and helping bands get formed and pointing people in the right direction, or the school of Ricky Hodge, which everyone loves talking about. You're a big key factor in this music scene. And it's been cool to see, like, the other side of you running sound that I believe it was called
Turntable
at the time.
I did Dublin like a time or two, but, you know. My main goals for this year, besides just playing, is I'd like to see everybody do some more, like, a festival-style deal.
Yeah.
And I'd like to be involved on starting that. But one thing, too, that the one thing I wish Bowling Green had was that they had in Los Angeles and Chicago was they would have, it would be like these little rooms. You'd think of like an office and cubicles, but mm-hmm. it was actual practice houses for people that didn't have a place
Nashville
to practice.
Nashville has them.
And they just, you know, maybe the PA and everything set up. Eventually, I know it'd be a while, but I wish I had something like that to start.
There is something here now.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
The name has escaped me, but it's over off of the bypass. I can't think of the name of it, but we do have like a practice space.
Well, good deal. That's awesome because
I have no idea how much it costs, and I can't even advertise it because I don't know the info.
Well, it's just kind of.
It does exist, and I think it's still kind of new, you know, and fresh. But I don't know, man. I mean, I feel like everybody around here seems to know somebody.
Well, that's true.
That's got a barn or a garage or something to jam in.
Outside even jams.
Yeah, this town's never had issues of. Bands getting started and having a place to play.
Right.
I've noticed that.
That's awesome, too. Like, in downtown Glasgow, it was hard on some of those people, of course.
Yeah.
That was the way it was. And I've seen some bands that would have theoretically probably been really good, but they never got the chance to start out.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
Oh, I can imagine. There's a lot of those stories.
But I love it. And I can't say enough for this whole music scene, you know.
Well, I don't think a lot of people in this music scene can't say enough about you. I really mean that. And you need to understand that the recognition you deserve is listen back to all these Sound Atlas episodes.
Yeah.
Anybody's name that you recognize, I guarantee they mentioned your name. So there's a lot of going back.
I even hear stuff like that when I do listen to them, and I'll even get embarrassed. Like, at home by myself, I'll be like, thank you a lot. I appreciate that.
Well, obviously, it's a real thing, so you should own it.
Well, man, I would do it for anybody.
Well, you have. Know,
then I won't stop. I'll keep being a pushy, little nosy, irritating friend as long as they get the point.
Some bands and some people just need that. So
yes.
Don't stop being you.
And I need some of the cussings I get every once in a while for being too pushy with
okay.
it.
Well, Ricky, you've done a lot of great things musically speaking. You've done a lot of great things in this music scene, including the Glasgow music scene and all the musicians from that generation under you, your generation and a generation under you.
Oh, my God.
Even a few generations under you, because I know the guys in Wolf Island are still in their 20s.
Right.
So, I mean, look at what the bridges you've connected of all those years of. It's just amazing to see what's come
and pass
from there.
It down, everyone.
Yeah.
If that happens, do you remember that feeling and how much it helped and give it to someone else?
Yeah,
for
exactly.
Sure.
Well, I wish you nothing but the best in the future with the Ghost and the Human Hoax coming back. I'm really proud of that. I'm really proud of you for bringing that back. And
I'm really excited for this.
I think the timing was perfect timing.
I do too.
You needed this more than anybody.
Oh, my God. I was about to implode and explode all at the same time. So if that's possible. But yeah.
Long overdue, my friend. But I just wish we had, I don't know. I wish we had more time.
We didn't really get into the nitty gritty of it. So.
Well, you know, sometimes you got to just, I don't know. I think people just wanted to get to know you better.
Yeah.
Because anyone who knows you might know all the things you've done and the bands you've been in, but it's the stories of the people you've helped and the people that have helped you.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that stuff that people don't know. So
it goes above and beyond, man. It's just all of us together.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about it. It's like there's nothing really separate to our area.
Yeah.
It links somehow.
That's true.
And again, we love you for doing this, man.
Nah.
You don't have to do this. You
I
know.
Don't. My wife is looking forward to when I'm not the host of a podcast anymore.
Yeah.
Then I can be at home.
A lot of Sundays out and about, I'm sure.
It's pretty much been all the time, but I like the fact that I've been mobile.
Right.
That's
yes.
been, you know, Russell and Tommy were kind of, they had to do it in their little studio, you know, and I found a way to go wherever. So
this
that's been nice.
Amazing.
But I appreciate your time. I know you drove down here from Glasgow. You guys had band practice today as we are speaking. So you have done a lot to get down here and tell your story. But thank you for your time.
Well, man, I appreciate
it. We are at Mellow Match Music and More, where the staff is cool and the stuff is cool and David's cool.
David's very cool.
And he's like, get out. It's time to go.
Yeah, it's closing time. Shut y'all's mouth and go.
Ricky, I really mean it when I say I look forward to what you've got coming, and I know the best is yet to come.
Well, thank you very much, and I'm honored to still be around alive and kicking.
Keep going, man.
Oh, it'll never stop.
Good.
Thank you.
Bye.